Well, you see, it's like this. If a poem is written well, it was written by the poet's voice, and it was written for a voice to be spoken. Reading a poem silently to oneself is similar to the difference between staring at a sheet of music and actually humming or playing the music on an instrument. That's why the 39th United States Poet Laureate, Robert Pinsky, launched the Favorite Poem Project in April of 1997. That was 19 years ago. And since that time, the Favorite Poem Project events began happening in every state of the Union. And it has spread to international classrooms and literary centers around the world. Last year, the phenomenon took place here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, with the initial project garnering kudos and literary praise of greatness. The goals of our hometown project is to promote the reading and appreciation of poetry and to encourage the teaching of poetry in schools from kindergarten to university studies. The Favorite Poem Project, Bethlehem, Americans Saying Poems They Love, happens on Wednesday, October the 19th in Bethlehem City, the City Hall Rotunda, again this year. And you can be a part of it by reading aloud your favorite poem. Listen to us today, and you will find out how you can share your thoughts and read your poetry, poetry of things that you love. This is WDIY-FM 88.1 Allentown, and you are listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. I remain George Miller, and of course, along with my wife and co-host, Kate Scuffle, we celebrate this project with you, our literary listeners. Jenny Gilrain, educator and co-founder, and Matt Wolf, poet, join us this evening, chatting about last year's event, this year's offerings, in addition to new developments in progress for upcoming events. Welcome, Matt. Welcome, Jenny.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great to have you guys. Well, actually, to have one of you back, Matt, you're new to the conversation.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad you're here, and I'm so glad that this event is happening again. As we said, the first reading of the Bethlehem Favorite Poem Project was held last year in the City Hall Rotunda. I and George were both lucky enough to be there. It was an amazing evening. Matt, you were one of the readers.
Mm-hmm.
And Jenny, we were talking a little bit before the program about some of the highlights and the memories and how unexpected an event in some ways it was, and that kind of ties into the desire to take away that fear or that sense of stuffiness about poetry or disconnect.
Yeah, I think Sue Lucrezzi and I, who co-founded the Favorite Poem Project of Bethlehem, were both surprised. I mean, we had our goals and we did a lot of work to make the event happen, but we were overwhelmed by the sense of intimacy that was achieved among, between the readers and the audience. And the audience, of course, did not know the readers for the most part, but it was just a tribute to poetry and poetry's ability really to cut through anything that is not essential, to cut right to the heart of things, whether the heart be a sense of humor or a sense of pain. Poetry just manages to cut through all the excess, and it enables strangers to make a connection with one another.
Yeah. I thought it was particularly interesting for me to listen, and Matt, we were talking about how different this can be from other readings. The readers were offering not just a poem, but the context of why they loved it, or what it meant to them, or how it affected them.
That was remarkable, and distinguished this reading. I personally have been writing and going to readings for 18 years now. Lived in San Francisco, been in New York and Philadelphia doing readings, and here in the Lehigh Valley. But I don't remember any reading that was quite like this, where it was designed for people to share why something was a favorite poem. Well, first off, to choose a favorite poem. Everybody chose a favorite poem.
Right.
Everybody. That was unique. Plus, really, it was the why that I think that set it apart, because that's where it got deeper. And it was everyone from administrators of the school district to teachers to just the average, citizens, if you will,
and
students. There was such a diversity of readers, of backgrounds, and they all had a story behind these poems and these choices, and they were really opening up, and people seemed to comment on that the most, and it felt to like it really connected. It made a connection with people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And in that regard, I know something that was very special to me is some of the highlights from last year was actually the poems in three different languages and by a little girl. I can't remember her name. What was it? Do you remember her name?
Yes, of course. So her name is Sarah Wilson.
Yes.
And she, at that time, was 8 years old, and she came with her family. She was very prepared. And she came in this gorgeous party dress, you know, the kind with sparkles and the kind of almost a tutu skirt type that was long. And she looked so beautiful and elegant and pretty and cute. And she got up there and she read this poem called Mary Had A. And it's a poem, it's a copycat poem, obviously copying Mary Had a Little Lamb. And it's by John Sheshka, who is a hysterical man who tries to encourage children to read by writing funny stuff. And so, do you mind if I read this poem?
No, please do.
Okay, so it's very short, so here goes. Mary Had A, by John Sheshka. Mary had a little worm. She thought it was a chigger. But everything that Mary ate only made it bigger. It came to her to it came with her to school one day and gave the kids a fright, especially when the teacher said, "Now that's a parasite."
And why did she say she liked
it? Well, that was the funniest thing. This cute little girl, when she shared why she chose this poem, she said, "I like it because it's funny and disgusting and gross."
All the right reasons.
Yes. Yes. And she had so much fun. You could tell she was there having so much fun, which was really cool to see.
Yeah. And then there were other people, though, that was interesting, who clearly it was very kind of cathartic to share the story of what, because if it's a favorite poem, why?
Mm.
It's not just I enjoy poetry. It's like, no, this is the poem.
Mm. Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And for something to strike you that deeply, poetry is a deeper art, if you will. You know, it can really get you on a deep level. So then to share why something was your favorite opens you up to sharing something that is not necessarily in the normal everyday conversation with your, you know, friends and family. A lot of people may not have known a lot of these stories about each individual, you know, and they all of a sudden, here they are sharing it in public, in City Hall. So, and by choice also.
Yeah. Yeah, so last year there were about 14 or 15?
16?
I think we had 16 scheduled, but two, unfortunately, were not able to attend for various reasons. So we had 14.
Okay.
This year we hope to have 15. That was the goal.
Yeah.
We couldn't say no. We couldn't choose 15 last year, so we had one extra. It's very hard.
And people submit, I mean, for the listener to realize, it's not the same as a kind of open mic. I mean, these folks didn't just show up that evening.
Yes. We have a submission deadline, which is September 19th, and that actually is the reason for, or one of the reasons for this radio interview, is to really encourage people in the community to submit their favorite poems. And we will choose 15 readers from those submissions. So we encourage everybody and anybody, even if you don't have a favorite poem, to kind of browse poetry on the web or in a book or in the library, and see what you come across, and send it to us. We have an email, which is faveFAV poem, POEM, Beth, BETH, at gmail.com. So, and then we have a website, which is http://favepoembeth.weebly.com. And if you look on the website, you'll get all the instructions for submitting.
And there's a Facebook page as well.
Yes.
I was just on it today.
Yes. Yeah. And if you're at the library, there's handouts at the library with all this information. If you know I happen to be there, just pick one of those up. It has all you need to know. And again, it could be the favorite poem of this time period, you know. You don't have to rack your brain about what is my favorite poem. You know, if something's really speaking to you now, and it's, that might even be better because it's current, you're passionate about it now, you're into it now, and that's fine too.
And that deadline is Friday, September the 19th. So don't put it off like most of us artists do, try to put it off to the last moment. Get your submissions in or your application in as soon as you can. Friday, September the 19th is the deadline for submissions if you want to read or be considered to read one of your favorite poems.
And we are looking for, we're very consciously looking for a diversity of readers in terms of age. We'll have some elementary school, some middle school, some high school, young adults, older adults. So diversity in terms of age, occupation, and ethnicity. So, and last year we did have, as I think George mentioned, poems in three different languages. We had a counseling, as someone who's head of counseling at Northampton Community College, read a poem in Spanish and English. And we had a Liberty High School senior read his favorite poem in Vietnamese. It hasn't been translated, so he just read it in Vietnamese and spoke about why he liked it in English. And to many people, that reading was extraordinarily powerful, just to hear the rhythm of his language and to hear him talk about his culture and his memories of living there and why he chose that poem was very powerful.
Yeah, that's the one that got me. That was extremely powerful. Another language, but it had a language all its own, that of emotion. And here was this young man, you know, removed from his home country, speaking. He was like this lone voice that was extremely powerful, and it was such braveness. I mean, the poem we spoke of, and there was an element of people were very poor in the poem, and it just, and here it is in the country of the United States, and the relationship, the past with Vietnam. So it was extremely powerful. You never know where those moments are going to come from. You just never know, and somebody will just walk up and blow you away, and that's what happened with him and myself.
And it's interesting that we were talking a little bit earlier, too, about the auditory or the quality of reading a poem aloud and the difference that it makes. Often, I think we're used to hearing the poet read their poem, which is a whole different relationship. But it was really interesting to hear someone who loves the poem bring that to their reading of it in a way that wasn't about someone who's very slick and used to this. And
Yeah, and there's such a relationship people have with that poem, though. So I think they really can pull it off so well.
Yeah.
Maybe even better, because it is really, there's life-changing poems people choose. Perhaps all of them, really. So they're so moved to read. And like I said, you don't have to be, you could have never read, in public. And you can submit something, and it's something you love, poem that has really moved you. Don't feel afraid to read it, because it's just a matter of doing what you've done all this time and just saying it out loud, because it's again, a really powerful moment.
I'd remind our audiences we're going to be talking a lot about how the project has grown and the educational outreach aspects and what's new. But please mark your calendars for October 19th, 7 p.m. at the Bethlehem City Hall Rotunda, because it is an amazing and beautiful evening to be a part of. And what's lovely for the readers, and I would encourage you to submit, is it's an incredibly supportive audience. It's just it's like being around the campfire, sharing. It's wonderful.
Absolutely.
And please remember what really poet laureate Robert Pinsky says, and that was, reading a poem silently to yourself is one thing, but it's similar to the difference between staring at a sheet of music and actually humming or playing the music on an instrument. We shall return with more information on the Favorite Poem Project Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, right here after this narrative from our special friends of WDIY.
Do you have a car that you're trading in? How about an old truck or boat that's taking up space? Let WDIY help you get rid of unwanted vehicles and turn them into financial support for the station. It's a simple and easy process. We handle all the towing, title, and transfer, and you receive a tax deduction. Turn your vehicle into the programs you love on WDIY. To learn more, visit WDIY.org or call 610-694-8100, extension 7.
You're listening to Lehigh Valley Art Salon. This is George Miller, and along with my wife, Kate Scuffle, we are chatting today with Jenny Gilrain, the educator and co-founder of the Favorite Poem Project, and with Matt Wolf, a poet who is very active in our area and actually very well known here on the East Coast. This is a very exciting project again. I was so thrilled to be a part of it last year, and I look forward to many things in the future. Can you tell us a little something about what is a little bit different in this year? Because I know your sponsors are helping very much, which is the Bethlehem Public Library and also the Fine Arts Commission.
Yes, this year we decided to extend the grant, extend the project into the realm of education. And we wrote a grant to the Bethlehem Fine Arts Commission, and we were awarded that grant, which is very exciting. So we started out by having a workshop, a poetry workshop for teachers in late June. And many teachers attended from the Bethlehem Area School District, and Matt Wolf, and myself, mm-hmm. and Sue Lucrezzi, and Josh Burke, who is executive director of the library, and Rhea Levy, who also works at the library. We all co-taught the workshop. It was at the library, which and we visited the children's room, which has just been renovated right. and is absolutely gorgeous. So it was a wonderful venue to hold this workshop. We got the teachers there, and it was interesting. We had a goal, you know, which was to sort of enliven poetry in the classroom. But what ended up happening in this workshop, we kind of developed this mantra, which was take the stress out of poetry. And maybe, I mean, I have found that many people in general, including teachers, avoid poetry because they think they're a little bit afraid of it because they think they don't understand it. And so what we tried to say to these teachers is, you know what, it's okay if you don't get it. You don't always have to get it. Sometimes you just like the sound of it.
Absolutely. Being one that writes poetry, I'll write a poem, and I'll tell you, you are not going to get it. You will never get it because it is pretty cryptic. Not all my poems, but many of them are, you know, just by design, because I want to expand the mind of the listener and have them fill in the blanks with their own perception, their own life experience. So instead of me just telling everything, I want to just show an area and say, hey, this is the arena in which these words are falling into place. So for you to get it and know what I was writing about, it's not going to happen. And that's the beautiful thing. So I mentioned that in the workshop, and we even had responses back, some feedback saying that was that meant so much to me, because there's so much of an analytic culture as far as our school and just in general, and there's this emphasis on knowing and not knowing, right and wrong, which might be good in certain areas. Well, it is good in certain areas if you're building a bridge, but this is poetry. It's a different thing. So it's personal. So you are no way going to see the poem the same way as the person sitting next to you. And that's a gift. That's a beautiful thing. That makes our world all the multicolors that it is. It's not just this homogenous thing in the sense of we're all seeing things the same way. So that was those types of things were really valuable when we had the workshop, and it would allow teachers and all of us really to open up that much more so we can move forward with what you just mentioned. Let's see, because people connected with poetry, they were there by choice to take this workshop. So it's a matter of then how can I do something where I'm not held back and don't feel, you know, as much fear at all to look to connect with my students. Let's, you know, make it, you know.
And not intimidating for them either.
Not intimidating, not dry, because it's a difficult thing, I think, in the environment of today's like schooling as far as with standardized tests and things like that. So, but yet we have to be mindful of them. So we were really talking about that as well. Mm-hmm. And we're a very down-to-earth approach, sitting together in a circle. You know, I went up through the school system in Bethlehem Area School District and have a lot of respect for it. So what can we do with our, really down-to-earth, again, approach? This is what we have to do. This is the structure. What can we do? And everybody gave their know, input. I learned a ton, as much from them as probably they learned from me, the teachers.
I remember one teacher in particular who came to the workshop saying she didn't know anything about poetry. And what we did was we sent teachers out to browse in the poetry section of the library, and then they just brought books up to the conference room and read a poem and said why they liked it. And this one teacher who said she didn't know anything about poetry read this poem and told us why she liked it. She had us all in tears. Because that poem related to an event in her life, and she ended up sharing about that, and it was very powerful.
It strikes me, too, it's interesting. So there's people having these connections to the poem. They're choosing the poems. You're talking about not making it intimidating and teaching it. Mm-hmm. And it seems like you're also offering children then the opportunity in a world of standardized tests or whatever to make room for something that has a bit of what, Matt, you said earlier, magic, emotion, and not being something terribly linear and black and white. It carves out a whole different space for seeing the world and experiencing the world.
My first experience after the workshop was to do a summer program at Freemansbury Elementary School for 2 hours for the incoming first, second, and third graders. So this wasn't going to be, let's sit down and get our pens out and this and that. And I just chose, you know, Shel Silverstein, these type of poems, and just it was animated, and it showed how poetry, through reading it, really comes alive. Mm-hmm. You know, kids are laughing, kids are smiling. I had poems that were interactive where kids had to act like, you know, an angry dog or an angry man. They were like having this funny thing where they walked around. So it really is something that lives and breathes poetry. Mm-hmm. So, but it does that really when it is read aloud, and there's a certain interaction between audience and poet. So much happens. It's like an explosion where it's much more than the sum of its parts, you know?
Was this workshop part of the Favorite Poem Project?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, the grant funded the workshop for teachers and then also is funding Matt to go into four different elementary schools. So he already did one of those workshops, which was in the summer school program at Freemansburg.
Oh, okay.
And I want to share this story. When Matt and I were planning for the upcoming workshops in the schools, he was kind of telling me what he was thinking and how he would start by telling the students what poetry is, kind of defining it. And I interrupted him. I said, wait, can you please tell me what poetry is? Because I really don't know. I've been looking for a definition ever since I was interested in poetry for the last, 5 years when I really got interested in it. Please tell me your definition. And I was hoping he was going to give me a clear, linear, boxed in definition, and I'll let him tell you what he told me.
Well, I just thought of how I interact with the kids, because I interact with the kids and they may not really know what poetry is. I haven't had much poetry if you're in first grade, second grade. And I just get down and say, poetry is really magic. You use all these words, but it's not a long book. It's just something shorter. And it comes alive, and you'll feel something, and you really, you the way you hear it is, it's a whole different thing. It's a really exciting thing, and kind of like the definition, it's deeper than just like the definition from a dictionary. You know, it's really like poetry does come alive. It you have to define it almost with a poem.
Yeah, in a poetic way.
Yeah, you have to define it with a poetic way. I mean,
which means instead of boxing it in, you kind of open it up, which is what you did in trying to define it.
You know what it is? It's kind of like if somebody asks, what is a piece of pizza? You're not going to write a definition, okay? You're not going to write, it has red sauce, and it's like a triangle. People have to picture that. You say, no, here, eat a piece of pizza. Eat a piece of pizza. So, I'll tell you what it is, kids, but I'm going to read something now, all right? I'm going to get into it.
I'm still looking for that analytical definition. And I appreciated Georgia reading the actual definition a year ago.
That's good, too.
I want it nailed down.
But moving forward, it looks like, cross fingers, if funding comes through, a lot of what you're hoping to do moving forward is bring more into the classrooms and have that live experience and that kind of conversation.
Yes, absolutely. We've applied for a Pennsylvania Council on the Arts Project Stream Grant, and if we get that, we'll be bringing more poetry into the classrooms, into community centers like in housing projects like Linfield. We'll be busing kids to hear Nikki Giovanni at Zollner Arts Center, Lehigh University. Yeah, it's very exciting.
Well, we want to remind our listeners to be considered as a reader for the event. Please send the necessary information in by Friday, September the 19th. And you can get information at the Bethlehem Public Library and online. There will be a limit of 15 readers, and all those who submit a poem will be notified by October the 5th, because October 19th is the day that we are doing our big read of favorite poem project. Audience members, too, are really invited to enjoy listening to these poems, the favorite poems of the people who are chosen. We thank you.
And it's a free event. It's a community gathering.
Oh, yes. I forgot to mention that.
Wow. Yeah, free.
That's important.
It is.
Yes.
So, free to submit. Free to enter.
We've been talking with Jenny Gilrain, educator and co-founder, and Matt Wolf, poet. We thank you very much for being with us today. Oh,
thank you very much.
Thank you both so much.
Okay. Right on.
Next up on Lehigh Valley Art Salon, At the Movies. A review of a current film with Paul Willistein of the Press.
Writer-director Woody Allen's latest film, Cafe Society, is released at the height of the summer movie blockbuster season. In Cafe Society, set during 1930s Hollywood and Los Angeles and the Bronx in New York City, Bobby Dorfman, played by Jesse Eisenberg, wants to leave the stultifying apartment of his parents, Rose, played by Jeannie Berlin, and Marty, played by Ken Stott. He wants to escape the orbit of his sister, a schoolteacher Evelyn, played by Sari Lanek, who's married to Leonard, played by Stephen Kunkin. And he wants to avoid the influence of his mobster brother, Ben, played by Corey Stoll. Bobby apprentices with his uncle, Phil Stern, played by Steve Carell, a Hollywood talent agent. Bobby falls in love with the uncle's secretary, Vonnie, played by Kristen Stewart, who has a boyfriend. Complications ensue. We won't spoil the plot reveal for you. Bobby heads back to New York City, where he manages Ben's swanky restaurant. He succumbs to the charms of Veronica, played by Blake Lively. Again, to connect the plot dots would diminish from your enjoyment of an already thin plot. Woody Allen does not appear in the film. Woody Allen does the voiceover throughout the film. Chief among the charms of Cafe Society are its cinematography by director of photography Vittorio Storaro of The Last Emperor, settings by production designer Santa LaCosta, a former Lehigh Valley resident, dialogue, quote, "The unexamined life isn't worth living, but the examined life is no bargain," unquote. Name-dropping faux insider references to Golden Age of Hollywood stars, and the performances. Jesse Eisenberg, Oscar nominee for The Social Network, is the designated Woody Allen. The hesitant voice, fluttery hand gestures, and hangdog countenance are similar to Eisenberg's often diffident screen persona. Steve Carell, Oscar nominee for Foxcatcher, is enjoyable as the peevish agent whose ego knows no bounds. Kristen Stewart of The Twilight Saga nicely underplays her role. Woody Allen has written and directed a feature film annually for some 40 years since 1966. It's understandable that not all are home runs. Cafe Society is a solid dub. If you're a fan of Allen, Cafe Society is worth seeing. Cafe Society is MPAA rated PG-13 for some violence, a drug reference, suggestive material, and smoking. Opening August 26th are Mechanic, Resurrection. Dennis Gansel directs Jason Stratham, Jessica Alba, Tommy Lee Jones, and Michelle Yeoh in the action crime thriller as Arthur Bishop returns to try to clean up his past. Don't Breathe. Fede Alvarez directs Jane Levy, Stephen Lang, Dylan Minnette, and Jane May in the horror thriller about a group who try to steal from a wealthy blind man. Southside With You. Richard Towne directs Tika Sumpner, Vanessa Bell Calloway, Parker Sawyers, and Deborah Geffner in the biography drama about the summer 1989 afternoon when the future president of the United States, Barack Obama, courted his future lady on Chicago's South Side. Hands of Stone. Jonathan Jakubowicz directs Robert De Niro, Ana de Armas, Ellen Barkin, and John Turturro in the action biography drama sport film about Roberto Duran and his trainer Ray Arcel. Complete Unknown. Joshua Marston directs Rachel Weisz, Michael Shannon, Kathy Bates, and Danny Glover in the drama mystery thriller about a man, his wife, and an old flame. I'm Paul Willistein of the Lehigh Valley Press at the movies for WDIY.